Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment. This is episode 24. Fight Club and Space Flight. I'm your host, Joseph Whalen, and my radiant and wonderful co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Hello, my love.
Hello, dear. So we had a very busy show today.
We sure did.
We've kind of cut that up a little bit here, and we will be doing our first event special after this one, dedicated to
San Diego Comic-Con.
We had way too much information come out of Comic-Con to fit into this podcast, so we're going to do a separate one just for that.
Yes, we are.
Wanted to make sure we did it justice.
Absolutely.
Before we start, though, we did have a rather busy week. We recorded our podcast early last week.
We sure did.
What did we do last week after the podcast?
Last week, we had a little weekend getaway down in Maryland.
We did.
Spent a little bit of time in Ocean City, Maryland, which is a very popular vacation destination for the East Coast, which we've actually never done.
Yeah, our first time.
It was our first time. To cap off our trip home, we took the Cape May Ferry from Delaware. So little added bonus on top of that. And then last night, we had another fun evening at The Man in Philadelphia. And we got to see Star Wars Empire Strikes Back in concert with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Yep, sure did. That was awesome.
Very awesome. And what was very cool was the fact that you were the one that actually bought the tickets for that show. So you would pick the seats. I didn't even pay attention when you bought them.
Right.
And it wasn't until we got there and, you know, they were like, oh, you're in the pit. We're like, the pit? What?
Yeah.
We were literally the fourth row from the stage. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, last year we went to see
A New Hope
in concert, and we were two or three rows back from the pit.
Right.
So
right.
We were about four rows better, but in the pit itself,
right?
You're literally right next to the orchestra.
Oh yeah, and what I thought was funny was there were so many different parts of the movie where you couldn't hear the dialogue because you were literally on top of the orchestra,
right.
And they were just so overpowering. It wasn't a bad thing because the music is beautiful.
We're not going for the movie because
right.
Chances are we've seen it.
You've probably already seen it. Or if you're spending that much money to see the movie, just go and buy it or rent it somewhere.
We're going for the music.
Yeah.
And it was a fantastic
experience. It was. The weather was beautiful, thankfully. For anybody that's, you know, been on the East Coast or in this area, you know, we've had the heat waves, you know, for the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
And one of the other patrons, as we were walking out, mentioned that she had a friend of hers that had been there earlier in the week and saw Harry Potter with the orchestra, but it happened to be when it was 95 degrees out at night. And her friend said that she actually had to leave more than halfway through the movie because it was just too hot.
That's
so
brutal.
Yeah, so I couldn't imagine because it is a mostly outdoor venue.
Right.
So,
Speaking of that, neat little insider tip that we learned. sitting in the pit. They air conditioned the stage for the performers.
Right, right.
And when you sit in the pit, because the pit is sectioned off with a wall,
mm-hmm.
a low wall, the air conditioning spills over the stage from
yes.
the performers so into the pit. So the
that
pit
was
is semi-air-conditioned.
Kinda nice. So being outside, we did kind of have our own air conditioning.
Yes.
So that
if you do go and it's hot, you want to have tickets in the pit.
Yeah, exactly. So that was very cool.
Anyway, that we're not featuring that on the podcast today.
No,
but
that
was
just
worth mentioning.
Hey. Well, and for anybody that is in the Philadelphia area and a Star Wars fan, for next summer, they obviously are continuing with the saga and they will be doing Return of the Jedi.
Yes, they will. So, anyway, on to the podcast.
Sure.
So, today in our Disney Detective, we have information. This is where our Fight Club portion of the title comes from. We had a physical altercation at Tower of Terror in Disney World. We have a follow-up on the violent fight that occurred in Disneyland a few weeks ago. And then we have some Avengers Endgame news. Then in our entertainment news, we'll talk a little bit about K-9 from Doctor Who. And then we have a update on the Orville and a story we had previously featured regarding the wedding of a couple of the cast of the Orville. Then we will move on to our insightful picks of the week. One of which stays with our theme of spaceflight. We'll go from there. I don't think we have any afterthoughts this week, do we?
No, because our afterthoughts will be...
Our afterthoughts are going to be an entire separate podcast. A
whole different podcast today.
All right. So let's come back and get into the Disney Detective.
All righty.
Go for Disney Detective.
So, you know, obviously our next story is the follow-up to the fight that had happened in Disneyland. So not to be outdone, now we had an altercation in Disney World. It was actually in Hollywood Studios by the Tower of Terror ride. So the attack began on the evening of the 13th when a Chicago woman and her group were
I want to stop you there for a second. The way you start that off, it sounds like a like noir detective novel. The attack occurred on the evening of July 13th.
It was a dark and stormy night. Well, and what's kind of funny is the Tower of Terror is that, you know, noir type thing. So
that's why it was so fitting.
I'm so glad you could comment on that. So basically, her and her group were upset that their fast passes weren't valid for the ride. So the incident happened in the pre-show area where visitors are ushered through a creepy library and they basically watch stuff about the Twilight Zone. And so a 23-year-old Disney cast member was offering to help them with the fast passes, but the group just became more and more angry. So she was standing at a podium and she was calling her supervisor to try and, you know, request security. Well, that's when the Chicago woman began pushing buttons on the ride podium, and then the cast member tried to stop her and kind of, you know, push her hand away, and that's when the guest punched her in the face.
And why do I sense that this woman who started all this is now going to sue Disney for this other woman assaulting her by pushing her
hand
away?
Well, yeah, so the scene then escalated where the family continued to yell profanities and they were recording it on their phones. So the woman and her group left the Tower of Terror as the cast member was talking with security, but security ended up finding them, you know, a few minutes later. When the sheriff's office responded, the cast member's eye was swollen, had a little bit of swelling going on, but she declined treatment, and she didn't want to press charges, which I don't know why you wouldn't, but now Disney has also issued a lifetime ban for the Chicago woman.
Wow, that's some serious stuff.
That's pretty bad. If Disney actually bans you for life, that's hardcore. Yeah. So,
could I get banned for life from Disney, possibly? maybe?
If you want. You don't have to go. I don't make you go.
You do.
No, I don't make you.
Frequently.
No.
Early, yeah. Early and often.
I'll book a trip without you. That's fine.
I know.
And then when I don't take you.
Because you drop me like a bad habit.
Then you'll be all upset. Oh, you went to Disney without me. I can't believe you went without me.
Well, there are other places to vacation besides Disney.
And we could do that too.
Okay.
So that was our Disney World story.
So we have updates on yet another Fight Club scene in Disney.
So obviously we had talked about this, you know, not that long ago about the family that the fight broke out in Disneyland in Toontown, in probably the most kid-friendly area of the park. So three adults who were allegedly involved with the violent brawl that took place earlier this month now have been or will be charged. So there was the brother, who he's been charged with 5 felonies and 9 misdemeanors. Then he allegedly attacked his sister, his brother-in-law, and girlfriend at the park, and then endangering his child and 3 other children who they were all at Disneyland with.
This almost sounds like a new sitcom or something.
Oh my God, it does. So then he also allegedly threatened to kill members of his family after he was escorted out of the park.
Well, just to cap it
right.
off, right?
And then in addition, he said, "I'm ready to go to jail tonight," before allegedly assaulting a Disneyland cast member and with his car following the fight, according to the press release. So he's facing 1 felony count of domestic battery and 1 felony count of assault. And, you know, he's just a hot mess. So that's him. So then his sister has been charged with 5 misdemeanors, including 4 misdemeanor charges of battery for attacking her brother and his girlfriend, and 1 for just attacking the brother's girlfriend. Then the sister, her husband, wasn't the third involved. He's facing 1 misdemeanor count of battery because he's accused of punching the brother's girlfriend during the brawl. So it was basically like a bar fight. Everybody started punching.
So during this whole thing, there was an older woman who was in a scooter. She got knocked down.
Right.
She didn't get charged with anything?
Nope, she didn't get charged with anything.
What about the baby that was in the stroller there? Did the baby get charged with anything? Because everyone else walked out of there with charges.
So if everybody is convicted of their crimes, the brother faces a maximum of 7 to 14 months in state prison, while the sister faces up to 2.5 years. I'm sorry, 7 years and 14 months. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. I was going to say because he was going to get less time. The sister would face 2.5 years, and then the husband just 6 months. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, I'm guessing they're probably banned for life as well.
So this is your lesson learned. Don't get into a fight in Toontown.
Right, because it'll cost you.
And then don't talk about it because we don't talk about
Fight Club. Because we don't talk about Fight Club.
That's the first rule.
So that's it with all our beating up people and Fight Club stuff.
I think that's more than enough. We need to get some European people involved here in some of the European and the Asian parks now.
Right.
We can't just have all the violence in the United States.
Well, no, let's not have it go anyplace else. Let's have some of the other parks be happy.
That's right, because
place.
In Paris we have the employees
we
that
have
are
the,
rioting.
Right, we have, we have trash all over the place. Oh, right.
Okay. Okay, what do we have that doesn't involve punching people in the face?
So, Avengers Endgame finally conquered King of the World's James Cameron's Avatar to become the highest grossing film of all time.
Oh, that's incredibly important.
So, the announcement was actually made last Saturday at the Comic-Con panel, where they were announcing Avengers Endgame is clicking past Avatar. And this week, so it was actually last week, and so I'm sure by now it's even gone a little higher. So it took 9 years for that record to be capped. There's currently a gap of $500,000 or $500,000 in global ticket sales between Avatar and Endgame, but that was gonna obviously get capped later that day. And basically the Marvel, you know, the head of Marvel said, thank you for making us, you know, the biggest movie of all time.
But in reality, it's not, because they had to re-release the movie in order to get this to happen.
Right, so, they cheated, but that's okay.
I mean, it's petty, it's childish. Oh, and they have the rights to Avatar anyway, so...
It's their own movie now,
what,
too.
Right, right. What, yeah, what did
just
you...
Cause.
What?
Just because.
Disney annoys me.
I know. And that's why we love doing this section on the podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that one itch I get to scratch about bashing Disney.
Right, I let you do it, and then we go
because you
on.
Don't let me do it at the parks anymore.
Well, so. No, because I don't want to get banned for life, because God knows what will happen.
Oh, you'll divorce me if I get you banned for life, I know.
I'll have to go and change my name and my identity just so that I can be able
witness
to
protection
go.
Just to get into Disney.
Witness protection to be able to get into the Disney parks.
Right. All right. So that's
that is
it
with,
for Disney Detective?
Yes, it is.
All right. Moving right along. So, some Doctor Who news. What
do we have? This was actually a cute little thing that kind of popped up. So, Doctor Who's robot dog K-9 is looking to be the hero of a spin-off series for children. So, for those of you who aren't familiar, K-9 was a little side character that came about. He actually first appeared in 1977 along with the Fourth Doctor, Tom Baker. And then
Tom Baker, my doctor.
So it looks like he's set for a comeback in a new TV series aimed for children. The series will see a redesigned K-9 who appears to be a little bit battle damaged and who had been taking part in a space war. So a source
K-9's a badass, man.
Well, yeah. So the source revealed that he's going to look a little bit more industrial and be covered in rivets. He was actually already featured in several spinoffs, including K-9 and Company in 1981. And he obviously came back in the 2006 reboot of Doctor Who with David Tennant, and actually also appeared in the Sarah Jane Adventures in 2007. So right now, two companies are actually bidding for the latest spinoff, which will be produced in the UK. But unless it is actually picked up to be broadcast by the BBC, it's unlikely that there will actually be any Doctor Who references permitted
so
for this.
So it's going to be a standalone.
So it's basically going to be a standalone unless BBC, you know, allows and then they bring in.
Now, is it going to be any, is there any information on if it's going to be set in a specific time frame during a specific doctor's reign?
Nope. Nothing
just, like that?
You know, basically he's going to be a little bit more damaged than previously seen. And that there was some sort of space war. That was really all in terms of the plot, you know, that they have right now. But it'll be cute, you know.
Yeah, K-9 was cool. He was a great addition to Tom Baker's reign as a doctor.
Yep. So got to keep a lookout for that.
Orville news. What do we have on the Orville?
So, not to, you know, figure keep this a little separate from the Comic-Con stuff, because this was actually one of the first things that kind of came out, was that Seth MacFarlane actually announced last Saturday that the show was going to be moving from Fox to Hulu for its next season.
And this is season 3, right?
And this will be season 3. So according to some sources, MacFarlane's current workload and the length of time it takes to finish work on the show because of the special effects and everything would mean that the third season wouldn't have been ready for a mid-season debut. So now it looks like the new episodes will be launching on Hulu, and it'll actually be towards the end of 2020. So the streamer currently has the first two seasons available for anybody that subscribes. So he was quoted as saying that the Orville has been a labor of love and that there are two companies which have supported that vision in such a way. So you have 20th Century Fox Television, where I've had a deal with them from the start of my career, and then Fox Broadcasting, which has been my broadcasting home for nearly 20 years. My friends at the network understood that I was trying to do this with the series, and they've done a spectacular job of marketing, launching, programming for these past two seasons, but the show has just evolved and become more ambitious, and I was determined, you know, that I wouldn't be able to deliver anything until 2020, which would be a challenge for the network. So that's when they started discussing different options, and it just looked like, hey, here we can do it at Hulu, and, you know, you don't have to worry about it. And
so has there been any speculation on how this move is going to affect the show? Because I know, you know, we've had a number of other shows, The Expanse being one, and a few others.
Lucifer was another.
Where they moved from network television to streaming services, and we've yet to see the effect on The Expanse, but we've you know, we've heard them actually talk at a panel,
and that'll actually be something we'll talk about in our next episode with The Expanse.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's going to be something where it's probably going to be a little grittier. I could definitely see them doing that. Obviously, they don't have to worry about language. They could actually, you know, adult it up a little bit more.
Are they looking at changing the format to a longer format?
They basically said, you know, now what we can do is, you know, if something's going to be an hour and a half long, something's an hour and a half long. If something's going to be 38 minutes, something's going to be 38 minutes.
Oh,
now,
that's interesting. So they can have variable time.
Right.
Format.
And I've seen that on other streaming, you know, series where, you know, it's not always that 48 minute block.
Yeah.
It's, you know, some episodes take a little bit longer. Some can be done in a shorter period of time.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, in some cases, it's an advantage for a lot of you know, series to come and do that.
Well, we saw the only one we've really seen so far transition this was Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucifer had a very
different
turn.
Feel.
It was a different show on there.
Was
it good or bad in your opinion?
I think it was good. I think it gave it, for me, because I had watched the show from the beginning, and I think you could tell it wanted to be a little bit grittier, but it couldn't because of it being
just the freedom allowed on streaming services.
Right, exactly. You know, where, like, there were things that had happened that were emotional and hard-hitting or, you know, very dark, but it couldn't be dark. But yet, when they kind of did a recap, you know, the first couple of episodes of what had happened in the past, you could see, you know, the pain and the anguish and, and obviously.
And Assless Chaps.
And I wasn't
You wouldn't have seen that on national television.
No, and I didn't complain either. but like some of the death scenes or the, you know, the one that the person that got impaled, you know, you definitely wouldn't have seen that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You got to see Lucifer more as his demonic self than you did, you know, in the series television. So I liked it. It added more grit to it.
Right.
So this might, you know, do the same, you know, for the Orville. I'm just sad that it's going to be like the end of 2020 now. You know, that's the one thing.
Well, I mean, if the alternative is to get canceled altogether.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll
and that's, you know, and it's funny because a friend of mine at work, we were talking, you know, because there's so many different shows that, you know, you watch on Netflix and whatever. And it's like, you know, when it comes out, okay, it's 8 or 10 episodes. And within a weekend, you've binged it. But even if you were to watch it, you know, within those, you know, 4 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever, by the time the series comes back again, it's been almost a year and a half. It almost is kind of, it reminds me of BBC television.
Yeah.
You know, they are synonymous for doing, you know, they do a a series, and then it's a year and a half before it comes back.
Yeah. Well, and their seasons tend to be shorter.
Their seasons are shorter.
With long form.
Right.
You know, you look at Sherlock.
Right. Sherlock is like
movies.
Right. It's like
four episodes to a season. And
right.
It's basically
exactly.
Four movies.
Right. Exactly. So, and that's what I was thinking. But then you're waiting 2.5 years for something to happen. And you definitely see that, you know, like we're fans of The Crown.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been a while since the last season had ended. And, you know, they're still filming or finishing it up, and it's like,
well,
I don't know,
and you completely change your cast
well, you
over,
can,
too.
Right, you change your cast over, but that's the one thing, at least with network television, is everybody kind of got used to, oh, okay, September, October, the new season's going to start.
Well, and the thing is, it's very formulaic. You have to satisfy your sponsors.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a content grind that you would get there.
Right.
And even with today's scripted network television, it's very different.
Well,
you don't
and now,
see the number of episodes. You
right,
don't see
and you
the
used
length
to, right,
stuff.
And the tradition used to be it started in, you know, September. It went till May. It was usually 20 episodes. They took the summer off, and then it started back again. Now you have shows that are only 10 episodes long.
Yeah.
Then you have these mid-season.
Yeah, the mid-season finales
stuff.
Right.
Then now you have shows that only premiere during the summer. Like that's their time frame
And honestly, that if anything, that's the one that I favor most because summer was terrible because summer was nothing but reruns.
Right, and that was summer was always good
if you missed
stuff,
your stuff, right.
Because then you could catch up, or if there was too much to watch
right.
Back before you could, you know, go on demand or stream.
And
or,
that's the thing, reruns
whatever.
Are passe because you can stream everything now.
Right, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this goes for them, but also is the trend going to happen where more network shows that, okay, well, we weren't really doing all that well on network. Well, maybe if we go streaming, you know.
Well, see, and the thing with streaming is it's a very different business model because
absolutely.
you're subscriber-driven. You're not
mm-hmm.
sponsor-driven.
Right.
And the problem with subscriber-driven is you have generally a finite number of subscribers.
Right.
So unless you're pulling in some kind of exclusive show to draw more subscribers in,
mm-hmm.
having airtime does not guarantee more revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the catch-22s of a streaming service is that on network television, if my ratings are up, I can charge more for my episodes.
Right.
Well, I don't have that as a source of revenue.
Right.
I can't bump, well, unless you're Disney, of course, I can't keep bumping up the cost of a subscription because the ratings go up.
Right.
You see Netflix do it, and there's major outcries when Netflix does it.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix justifies it by spending $4.5 billion on content.
And you can tell.
Right.
You know, it's not, oh, we're getting the same thing.
But
or
they don't have the luxury of saying, okay, well, we're going to pull in, we'll just say The Expanse, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fixed cost that they have to pay
mm-hmm.
for that.
Yeah.
Just to get the episodes, not even to produce anything.
Right.
So we're going to pay for that. But I can't charge people enough money to offset that cost on their subscriptions.
Right.
And I can't throw advertisements out there. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, there are different scale of subscriptions for Hulu where you do have advertisements on there. So it's kind of a hybrid form of streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Hopefully it should pick up. We should get a little bit more grit, as we say, out of it. And it should still be good even after the wait.
Right. So on, you know, the tales of Orville, 2 months ago, the two of the stars actually had gotten married, Adrian Palliuk and Scott Grimes. Well, now it seems that they filed for divorce after 2 months of marriage. So it was actually reported on Monday where they had actually just appeared at San Diego Comic-Con and sat, you know, through a panel, And she actually was the one that filed for divorce. So the two started dating in 2017, but didn't actually make their relationship public until the following year. They actually, like I said, had just tied the knot in May in Austin, Texas. They are two of the leads in the show, playing Commander Kelly Grayson and Lieutenant Gordon Malloy. This will actually be her first divorce and Scott's third.
Well, third time's a charm, right?
Yeah. So
you know my philosophy. I think everyone should be married and promptly divorced once in their life, just as a life lesson.
Right. Get it over with.
It was a profound life lesson for me. I think you would probably agree, having gone through it once, and then you move on and do it right the next time.
Yeah. So it's a shame, you know, because they had been together for, you know, 2 years and only married for two. At that point, it's like, well, why'd you even get married?
Well, at that point, most judges will allow you to annul the marriage, and you don't have to worry about assets and stuff like that. There's no kids involved. So
the other thing is, it'll be interesting to see now with the show what different spin.
Well, it might actually contribute to that grittiness.
It could. And also, you figure if they're, you know, if it's not going to be airing until, you know, the end of next year, you know, maybe by then,
you might have a cash change.
They might have a cash change, or maybe they'll be back together. You never know. So that is it for our entertainment news, my dear.
Awesome. Let's move on to our insightful picks of the week. And I turn it over to you, my dear.
So I was actually at a loss of what to talk about, because I think I've gone through everything that I watch. But while we were talking, and you were mentioning what your insightful pick was, that kind of triggered something to
bring memories, up.
Exactly. excuse me. So this past February, there was a short subject documentary that had aired on Netflix. It had actually won an Academy Award, excuse me, the year before. And it is called Period, End of Sentence. And it's a documentary.
A documentary? You're doing a documentary?
I know. I did a documentary.
Oh, boy.
I know. And it's only 26 minutes long. Mind blank
there, huh?
Totally did. So it's about Indian women and the stigma that surrounds menstruation and being able to manufacture sanitary pads. When we were, you know, talking about the topic last night, it's just mind-blowing that in this day and age, around the world, that something so basic isn't available for all women.
Right.
Sorry about that. And that there's the stigma, and it's a taboo topic to even mention. And so this filmmaker, so the backstory is that in 2012, a teacher heard that there were difficulties facing around the globe about women being able to get product, you know, and so she kind of started this plan and found a person in India who, this gentleman who's actually known as the Pad Man, who was able to make pads inexpensively, because women can buy them over there, but they're just so expensive. And as you see in the documentary, you'll have, you know, like a little convenience store, and they're back behind the counter or something. So it's not like a woman can just go and pick them up and pay for them. Like, the woman actually has to ask to get them, and they're very expensive. And because women have just been so shamed about it, they can't even say the word menstruation or period. They say it and that, and you know, it's such a dirty word.
Kind of like how it was here in the 50s.
Absolutely. You know, 40s and 50s. You know, and not so much, I don't know if we ever kind of went through that same thing, but there, because of the religious aspect, when a woman has her period, she's considered unclean. So in some cases, she's not allowed to go to the temple. She's not allowed to go pray. She's not allowed to cook. She's not allowed, you know.
Which is kind of ironic considering that's your body's process of cleaning itself.
Right, exactly. If anything, you're more clean than
right,
any
right.
other time. And we've, you know, seen it and heard it time and time again, is that girls aren't allowed to go to school.
Right.
So you have these girls that are missing, you know, 4 or 5 days of school a month and are constantly being, you know, left back just because they have their period. It's nothing. So this group went in and they, you know, showed these women how to make these pads at, you know, a fraction of the cost. And they started their own little factory, and they were almost like traveling saleswomen. They, you know, would take their packaging and they would go around to different villages and meet with the different women and say, you know, would you buy these and would you use these? And, you know, and women, other, you know, talking to other women, you know, they were able to kind of break through. It still has such a far way to go, but it's very eye opening for someone who, I just go to Walmart and buy them. I don't even think about it, you know. And it's kind of funny because being as old as I am, I still kind of like twinge, like, oh God, I'm buying these. Or when I go to check out, if I don't go through the self checkout, oh, is there a guy or a girl? And then there are times I'm like, screw it. You know what? I'm bleeding. Whatever. You know, there should be no shame. You know, we shouldn't even.
So it sounds like not only are they addressing a real need here to get these products out there to those who need it, but it's also creating jobs in the process.
Absolutely. Because all of these women who normally didn't have, you know, any real work, they basically would stay home and take care of their family. They're now helping to make a living because, you know, 90% of the people that are working, you know, for this company are women. So it's helping
awesome.
All around. So yeah, it's, again, it's a 26-minute long documentary. You know, we kind of have talked about it before, and to have Madison sit down and watch it,
right,
just so that she can see,
appreciate what she has.
Exactly.
Here.
You know, mommy goes to the store and buys them, and they're, you know, sitting in the bathroom for you. And, you know, you still go to school, and yeah, you might not feel well and you might not want to, but, you know, things aren't taken away from you
right.
because of it.
You're not losing opportunity.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, definitely, you know, 26 minutes long, period, end of sentence, can be found on Netflix.
Awesome. Great pick.
Thank you.
So Mayan this week is contributing to the show's title this week of the space flight portion. Because I make up the titles and I can do that.
Right. You're allowed.
So this one is in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. I'm sure everyone's noticed you've been inundated with various documentaries.
Which has been very cool.
There's been a ton of stuff to watch. This one stood out to me. This was the one that is called When We Were Apollo. Was directed by Zachary Wheel. This actually started out as a Kickstarter project, so it's been crowdfunded. And I'll just read the byline, the intro line for this. Apollo's story is a metaphor for our ability to rise to challenges and exceed with bold solutions. Behind every astronaut who set foot on the moon was Apollo's workforce, a team of over 400,000 who knew that the program was only as good as their effort. This film offers an intimate look at experiences, of its inspiring backstage figures who spent almost a decade getting us to the moon and back. Who were the men and women of Project Apollo? Who are they today? What do they think of the extraordinary effort they helped make possible? Coinciding with the 50th anniversary of the first moon landing in 2019, When We Were Apollo is an intimate and personal look at the Apollo space program through the lives and experiences of some of its most inspiring behind-the-scenes figures, engineers, technicians, builders, and contractors who spent the better part of a decade working to get us to the moon and back. Now, the one thing that I loved about this is it was not glorifying the astronauts, and not to take anything away from the heroes that actually strapped themselves to these multi-ton bombs, basically, and flew them into space. But in order to do that, you had to have an entire army of people, primarily contractors. And that was a thing that hit home with this documentary was they went back and they interviewed people, engineers, mathematicians, computer programmers, construction workers, rocket scientists. I mean, they went down to the point of interviewing the guys that were laying the concrete for the launch pads.
Oh, wow.
It was a fantastic documentary, incredibly well researched, and it was about the people and their experiences. They didn't just talk about what they did on the project. They talked about the inspiration the project brought to them. You know, it started off in the 50s after Sputnik launched. You know, there was effort that was put forward in the missile program before NASA was even created. And some of these people started, you know, working at Redstone and some of the Army and Navy arsenals, Air Force arsenals, to build these rockets. And it was then eventually wrapped into NASA. But the efforts, the you know, to get 400,000 people working towards a common goal is an amazing thing. And the one story that struck home to me that I mentioned to you that inspired your pick was this one woman who was a stay-at-home mom at the time. She was so inspired by Kennedy's speech telling us that we need to go to the moon, she decided that she wanted to be a part of the space program. And she had mentioned this intention to her husband, and her husband's comment to her at the time, you know, the 50s mentality at the time here, says, well, you won't make enough money to buy your own Kotex. And she says, shortly after that, I was divorced.
Good for her.
I was a single mother trying to raise my three kids and, you know, had very little financial aid coming in, and I had to do something. She eventually wound up working for IBM as a computer programmer.
Okay.
And she was one of the people who contributed to the guidance software that was on the lunar lander when it landed.
Wow, that's incredible.
That I mean, it was like stories like that. They were so personal, and they were so inspiring. You know, the one was happened to be a rocket engineer who was recruited out of high school.
Oh, wow.
After he built a model of a rocket engine for a science project, the first science fair that his school did.
Wow.
And the Army came and recruited him to work on the Redstone project, and he eventually was wrapped up into NASA and was part of building the Saturn V rockets.
Oh, wow.
So that just that level of detail on this documentary was just it was inspiring to watch it and to see these real people. You know, they're not test pilots. They're not. They didn't go into space, but just the level of pride that they took in the
and
things that they did.
And without what they did, we wouldn't have been able to put men up in the moon, you know.
Absolutely. So it really hit home the contributions of all these people that got us to where we are. And, you know, and I, again, I hate getting political on things like this, but you hear the phrase, make America great again. That's when America was great. When you had men and women who weren't traditionally working together, who came together. You had African Americans that came together. You had minorities from all around the world. You had you had Australians that were contributing to this.
Mm-hmm.
You had situations where you had to put tracking stations around the world,
mm-hmm.
and you had to get all the cooperation of all these nations, all these people. That's what America was about. America was about bringing the world together,
mm-hmm. yeah.
not dividing it.
Yep,
because
absolutely.
In order to do the impossible, which is exactly what they did with this Apollo program, you had to have the entire world on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a very inspiring thing, and the documentary was just incredible. It really was.
Very good pick.
So that was my pick. When We Were Apollo is available for streaming on Amazon Prime today. I think that's all we had. We had no afterthoughts because we're going to be doing a special podcast
yep.
on Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back shortly for that. I think we need to get some lunch, though. We're, we're running a little late today. That's it. Anything else?
Nope. That is it.
All right. Thanks for watching. We'll be back shortly with another podcast and one next week as well.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.